Hello, and welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. Today, we're going on a journey beyond the doors of the mind, and what may we find there? Or rather, what may find us? Indeed, what journeys beyond the mind of doors will dreams decide? And when the mists recede and the dreams journey, mind doors perception inchoate chaos reality dreams mind? It's Maelstrom Storytelling on System Mastery. Welcome back, one and all, to System Mastery. I am your host, Jeff, joined, as always, by my friend, John.
Oh, no.
Host of the show.
Yay!
There it is. I just wanted you to earn it.
Yeah.
Just work for it. Earn that. Earn that
Grab
title.
For it. Reach for it. Like that brass ring.
Reach for the stars, my friend. Someday you'll be the host of System Mastery. And that day is today.
Ooh.
And I am also the host.
Yay.
We merely have two.
With two hosts. Two identical hosts.
As you'll find.
They walk alike, they talk alike.
At times
sometimes they even digress alike.
I don't remember the third thing that rhymes with ock.
they scott ock alike.
They constantly crave cock alike. Is that what it actually was?
Yeah, that's it. Haley Mills and Haley Mills in Let's Get Some Dick.
They're cousins. Identically slutty cousins, as you'll find. No one's judging. We think it's great. what are we reviewing today, John?
Why?
Sorry, I'm navigating the waters of cough.
This fine day, we are doing Maelstrom Gaming. This is...
Maelstrom Storytelling, sir.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's Maelstrom Storytelling, which is important.
It is. It's very important.
And this is by Hubris Games. Now...
That's a tough thing to choose as a name for yourself.
Yeah. Also, you would be forgiven if you thought that maybe this game was called Hubris Games, because Hubris Games is in the same size print as Maelstrom Storytelling.
Except Maelstrom is in a harder-to-read font.
And Storytelling is actually smaller, which means you might think Maelstrom Storytelling presents Hubris Games, like Hunger Games, but for people who are about to have their downfall because they think too highly of themselves.
I'll never stop games.
Nothing could go wrong, games.
My petard is quite unhoistable, games. I'd like to see them try.
The game.
Mm-hmm. So Maelstrom Storytelling is from 1997.
Which is going to be important as we begin talking about it, because I feel like...
It's the year I graduated from high school. And you're right, John.
And I do feel like that.
That's an interesting feeling you have, and you're correct.
It's a weird feeling mm-hmm. I had in my gut.
It's just a thing.
I was like,
down
that's
inside.
The year that old man graduated from high school.
What year did you graduate from high school? Go ahead, let me.
I don't know, like 2000?
2000, fuck you.
Yeah.
That can't be actual.
No, it is. Oh, it's actual and factual.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Yeah, you old piece of shit. I get out of here.
I need my sciatica medicine.
But yeah, no, it's important because a lot of the concepts and ideas in this feel like they are ahead of their time. They're a little forward thinking. They would fit, like if this came out now with a few tweaks, this would definitely fit into like the current story game culture that we have.
Yes, into the modern zeitgeist of gaming. Although, you know, it's not as old or as... new as you think it is for the most part. Like Spirit of the Century, for example, which is kind of a proto Fate, came out around like I think 1999, 2000, somewhere in there. This is maybe 2 or 3 years ahead of its time.
Oh yeah, well even then, it's not like Spirit of the Century was immediately like, oh, this affected everything. Like it took a while for Fate and that idea of like describing your character rather than just having a number mm-hmm. to really take off.
That's true.
Yeah, it's a forward-thinking game.
It's a very forward-thinking game.
Yeah, it thinks forward. Mm-hmm. It takes one forward when it thinks.
And when one is forward, one is happy.
Ooh, ducklings!
To too old to be a duckling. Why do I have to be the one who gets the old man line? Why did I set it up this way?
Ah, you old piece of shit.
God damn it.
Yeah, I'm going to go ride around and cruise town with my buddies while you stay at home, old man.
I mean, that's true.
I'm never going to get old.
That's true if you keep driving the way you do.
Yeah, very carefully.
You'll die.
Turning my blinker off after I've changed lanes.
Yeah, that's such a young man thing.
It's when a young man's game. When you're off old, the blinker.
When you're old like me, you'll learn to savor that blinker.
Just let it linger.
Let it ride.
Let everybody know where you've been.
Mm-hmm.
Look, guys, I just came over from that direction.
I'm establishing my roots.
I'm establishing dominance.
Used to be in the center lane pride.
So, yeah, there you go. Maelstrom Gaming. Maelstrom Storytelling. Motherfucker.
Maelstrom Hubris Games Storytelling
takes place in the Maelstrom.
Mm-hmm.
And the Maelstrom is, I know that I am going to be more positive about this game than Jeff is.
Oh, fuck you, buddy. We'll see how happy I can be about this
game.
We'll
see how positive I am.
5 out of 4 stars.
We'll see how many positive boners the Joker can make.
One, as it turns out.
One positive boner and one negative boner, and then they touch.
You've been reading my fanfics again, haven't you? Stay out of those. You're not mature enough.
For matures only.
For extremely matures only.
For seniors only.
Your little card. You can also
You got to unlock it with your AARP card.
But at least you can read them while drinking a free small coffee at McDonald's.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, okay. You're probably right. We have different things that set off our irritation alarms.
Yeah, and this one life. Did not buzz mine, but it definitely buzzed yours.
So in John's case, a lot of the time it's too many made-up sci-fi style buzzwords.
Yeah.
Or even fantasy style buzzwords. In my case, it's often the opposite, which is where everything in the game is a regular word.
See, I really appreciate the setting of Maelstrom for not giving in to let's name everything dumb bullshit.
It's kind of a mix. Like, you know, they have interesting place names, but then everything is just like the storm rages across the Maelstrom near the edge, and sometimes it'll dump you off at the reef, and that kind of thing. It's all just regular names for stuff. But okay, the setting of the Maelstrom actually I thought was kind of fun. So before we assume I'm going to hate everything about it, I only have minor niggling complaints about this book for the most part.
Now let me focus on them.
For about an hour.
Yeah, the Maelstrom itself is a setting that is like a large continent that has...
turds? Turds? Is it turds? Turds.
It has turds. No, I'm trying to think if it's actually surrounded by water or if it's just on, like,
turds.
Most of it, if it's, like, peninsulaed.
There are two primary continents surrounded on most sides by water. I think the idea is that no one knows what's on the farther edges so that you have room to grow.
Yeah, that's right. There's a giant desert on, like, the far east side of the continent.
The Endless Sun, as it is known.
Yeah.
Where one of the two suns that makes up this setting is always in the sky, and so it's just always a desert there.
Yeah. But the rest of it is various things. You've got your plains and mountains and...
Turds.
Your turds. I don't know why you're on turds. What is with this? What are you doing here? What's the bit we're going for? We're going for turd bits? Is that what you want? You want a big bag of turd bits?
Why are you calling out my bits, John? Just, huh? just let the bit happen organically.
Huh? You want me to get a bag of turd bits for you?
One of those, like a Tim Hortons thing? A Turd Hortons thing, I guess.
Yeah, it's Turd Hortons. It's that dog thong.
Okay, we got there. That's all I wanted you to say was Turd Hortons.
There we go. Okay. And then there's a giant amount of sea out there. And
split up into two primary seas. There's the South Seas, which are more of a piracy and kind of islander vibe, and the North Sea, which is more of like an Arctic and kind of mystery. And
That's where you get your like... barbarian stuff and all your cold stuff and
frozen cities and at the mountains of madness references and
yeah, so you get anything that's cold based up top and anything that's like Caribbean based down bottom.
Exactly, you keep your hot side hot and your cold side cold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jason Alexander comes dancing through the Maelstrom.
I wish that was what happened.
Well, you never know what will happen in the maelstrom.
That's true. He might just not know who he is.
Yeah, Jason Alexander comes dancing out of the storm and is like, hey, for some reason I've got this vision of a McDLT in my head. I don't even know what it is.
But I do know it keeps the hot side hot and the cold side cold, and it will not age well because it's made of styrofoam. Sorry about that. Anyway, it's a two primary megacontinents split up into various territories that different types of adventure could happen in. Sometimes they're connected by a land bridge, sometimes they are not, and there are two primary oceans, which are also harbingers of different sorts of adventure. The reason I'm saying that sometimes there's a land bridge and sometimes there isn't is really the core kind of element and philosophy of this setting, which is that everything is constantly changing just outside your field of vision.
Basically, the maelstrom refers to the flux of this world. And everyone keeps trying to play it pedantically, and
they've got it in Monty Python for some reason.
People are doing the weed flux.
It's just there's too many fluxes, and you're like, who's buying all these fluxes?
It's Maelstrom.
Oh, it must be Maelstrom.
Yeah. So,
because personally, I give no flux about it at all. We'll be here all week,
unfortunately. So. The maelstrom goes around and changes things in the world. Now, sometimes it can be a little change. So it'll be like, oh, those mountains were like 25 miles farther away, and now I'm much closer.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be I was in the North Sea, and now all of a sudden I'm in the South Sea.
Yeah, although that's increasingly and vanishingly rare. But for the most part, it's things change, but they don't change certain aspects of their fundamental nature. Like, if you live in a small village and you look off to the west and you see mountains, there's usually mountains over there, but sometimes they're different kinds of mountains.
Yeah, you might have like some rolling hills, and then you might have giant peaks, and
mm-hmm.
It just sort of depends. But it really also depends on one of the key aspects of the game, which is affinities, because certain places will have affinities for things. So if your village has an affinity for there are mountains to the west,
mm-hmm.
then no matter what shifts happen, you'll still have something to the west.
Yeah, like 99% of the time, there are mountains to the west.
And
they never use the term always in the book. It's just almost always.
Yeah, you have an affinity for that happening. Like,
yeah.
There are, one of the canon things in the book is there are these two towns that have an affinity for each other, and they'll shift around, and every few, like, years, they'll pop back next to each other. And it's always the same, like, place when they pop up next to each other. And when it happens, both cities have a big festival. They do a big thing because a lot of them intermarry between. So it's an opportunity to, like, see their families on either side.
Yeah, and all the people from one city go over to the other city because it has the good Denny's in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But everyone from the other city goes over to that city because it's got the Turd Hortons.
Gotta get that Turd Hortons. Let me get some turd bits and a glass of hot turds, please.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. I didn't try very hard on that one, but I think it still
you
worked.
You did not. That was the real, real low energy bit. So, yeah, the idea behind the maelstrom is things are ever shifting, and one of the only ways you can actually get where you're going is the roads of the ancient empire.
Yeah, because roads have an affinity towards roads. So this is kind of a neat... When I was reading how this all kind of works, it just kept putting into my mind, like, designing, like, a hex board game. Because it was like, okay, roads don't usually just shift out of existence halfway along the road.
Yeah, you won't be, like, walking along a road, and then all of a sudden it dead ends into a forest.
Yeah, or, like, into a wall that's got a picture of a tunnel with the road continuing painted on it, and then you walk right into that. The damn Roadrunner got you again. That doesn't happen.
No.
Instead, roads can connect when you're putting down tiles in this world, so to speak. If there's a road somewhere, you connect it to a tile that also has a road on it. The road may not go where you were expecting in the first place, but you will normally be on a road.
Well, usually there's certain roads that are from the ancient empire that has crumbled and is no more.
Mm-hmm.
And those roads are basically mappable. But even then, the actual travel time can change. So it'll be like, if I go out on this road, eventually I will hit this city. Now, it might be a day's travel. It might be 6 days travel. I don't know. But the road will eventually get me there.
Yeah, and legend tells that there will be an in and out on the left as you make your way along. But sometimes there's just a friendlies.
Yeah, but if you stop at the in and out, then when you get back on the road, you're going to be completely somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh no, I'm in like Bakersfield or some shit.
Oh, crap. That's a haunted, that's a cursed in and out.
The cursed in and out.
Like, if I'm on my way somewhere good, it connects me to Bakersfield.
Ooh, that's, ooh, baby, no.
Don't you do that to me, in and out.
How dare you, in and out.
You connect me to that weird intersection of Buttonwillow and McKittrick.
Heck yeah.
So I know I'm on my way to the Bay Area.
California stuff.
That's only California, and not just California stuff, but for people who have driven from San Diego to the Bay Area.
Yeah, that is the 5.
Mm-hmm.
Have you gone from Southern California to the Bay on the 5? You know Buttonwillow McKittrick.
Yeah, because there's nothing else to know.
It's my hobbit, Buttonwillow McKittrick.
That character name literally exists in World of Warcraft. There's a gnome in one of the cities you can find named Buttonwillow McKittrick because some World of Warcraft employee had the same experience.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, Blizzard headquarters is in Anaheim, so anytime someone from there was driving up to the Bay Area, they're like, man, Buttonwillow McKittrick is such a great name for, like, a hobbit or a halfling or a gnome.
Mm-hmm. So, the thing that's true of roads is also true of a variety of other environmental features. Coastlines tend to stay coastlines.
Yeah, usually if you're a city on the coast, you will stay on the coast.
Yeah, and if you're sailing along a coast, because you know that eventually if you sail on this coast, you'll get somewhere, you don't eventually sail into a part where the coastline ends. Cause
sail and then you look over to the side and the coast is clear.
It's just gone. It's just, what's here? Wall.
A wall, and there's a tunnel with a Roadrunner painted on there.
So, anyway. And the same thing is also true of what's the last one? Generally oceans follow the stars. They don't reverse direction.
So you can, on open water, again, what might take a day might take 6,
mm-hmm.
but at least you'll be heading in the correct direction if you follow the stars.
Well, I appreciate that. That, you know, the ground, the hex grid that I picture this world is existing on isn't sometimes just picked up, spun around, and put right back down in the same spot.
Yeah.
That would have been mean.
That would have just been a dick move,
mm-hmm.
but it is interesting, and I really like it that they're like, you know, most of the time, if you want to stay, like, you know, safe, you're
going
to be on a road mm-hmm. or in a town.
Yeah.
But even if you're in a town, if you stay there for long enough, you might, if you were like, oh, I'm just going to stay here for a couple days and then get back on the road to wherever.
Mm-hmm.
The road to wherever might not actually be there when you come back out.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably a road there because there's probably an affinity for a road there, but who knows where it goes?
Yeah.
The local villagers do because their minds and mindsets tend to shift along with the shifting of the reality of the world.
Yeah, it's a very interesting setting, and it's one of those things where they're like, yeah, if you go out into the wilderness, you're probably just going to get lost and die because you will continue to shift into wilderness from wilderness.
Mm-hmm. Wilderness tends to connect to wilderness, and it's extraordinarily difficult to get back out of it. There are a variety of natural kind of disaster or I guess storm style effects that are relevant to this kind of world setting. For example, whorls or hell holes.
Yeah, is sort of a weird like bubble that shows up in the world where either like some event is playing out over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be like, oh, I got stuck in a whorl and I was playing out some event where like a king was trying to like escape his own assassination or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you play some part in it over and over. Who knows how long you'll be in it? You could be there for like 6 months without realizing it.
And then eventually it just kind of poops you back out or you die in there.
Yeah. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
And no one really knows. Like, some people think, oh, it's part of the dream is leaked into the real world. Or some people are like, no, just time was displaced.
Because
mm-hmm. it moves, like, the locations around. So like, oh, I'm sure the Maelstrom just moved time around, and there's a weird bubble of time over there.
That's probably, yeah, that's pretty much what a lot of people in the game world tend to think. But they tend to call them eddies or whorls or hell holes because they're traps. And you get a lot of like local legends about them. Like, oh, yeah, I knew a guy who went into one of those and popped out 22 years later, the same age.
Yeah. And you also get storms are very important in the Maelstrom, as those are generally indicators of change.
Mm-hmm.
There's like an actual for real Maelstrom that goes across the land. And if you get stuck in it, that's when big changes happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it might be that, you know, some distances sort of change a little bit, or your town shifts the surrounding area a little bit. But when you get stuck in a storm, shit can go crazy.
Yeah, so, like, if you're out doing pirate stuff, you might be running away from storms or diving into them to hide from even greater threats.
Yeah.
All right, so, one other thing that's kind of an interesting natural phenomenon, that's the word I was looking for, that tends to pop up in this world.
Is John Travolta has a brain tumor that makes him super smart. He doesn't sleep anymore. He learns Portuguese overnight.
Mm-hmm. One of the natural Michaels that occurs in this world.
Is John Travolta's an angel.
Oh,
but he smokes and he loves donuts.
I'm really glad you picked that up so fast.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Okay, so
one of the Pulp Fictions of this world.
One of the natural greases found in this world.
Is my hair.
Yeah, okay, so newcomers.
Yes.
So most of this world is human, and there are some other races, and we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, there are a bunch of other weird things in here, but predominantly in the main continent, it's just humans.
It's humans. Now, occasionally, and actually fairly commonly, new humans will just suddenly appear, either children or grown up already, just sort of out in the world.
Yeah, usually they pop up in some manner of wilderness,
mm-hmm.
and just sort of wander out into civilization.
Yeah, which is weird because it's hard to wander out into civilization, but they're good at it.
Yeah, they pop up. Usually it'll say like, oh, they wake up in like a field somewhere with no memories,
mm-hmm.
and then they just wander out and they'll find the nearest town and be like, hey, what?
Who am I? Who?
What the shit?
I've got vague memories, but no proper nouns.
Yeah.
It's like my entire memory is a Scrabble game.
Oh, it's. I thought you were going to stop there and say it's like your entire memory. Oh, I've got vague recollections and no proper nouns.
All I can remember is the names of bad John Travolta movies, John.
Yeah, Travolta.
One of the natural wild hogs that occurs in this state.
I'll show you my natural wild hog.
John, who's your favorite Czech count?
No, we're not doing that right now.
Check
you gotta
out
set
my
it up.
Dick.
You gotta set it up better.
I'm so proud of that. That's mine. I made that one up.
Good job. You did it.
Thank you. Okay, so anyway, newcomers have no actual memories of their previous lives, and no one's sure where they came from because none of them have any memory of that.
Yeah.
The book kind of strongly hints and intimates that it should be Earth, and it should be, you know, pick a century on Earth that you like the fashion from. But it could be whatever. They're just from somewhere, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And again, there's a bunch of theories that either they come out of the dream again, because there's one of the societies is super into the dream.
Mm-hmm. They fucking suck. Just and put that out. Stop talking about dreams, you shits.
All of their theories are that everything has to do with the dream. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're like, oh, this is a dream. Everything's a dream.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Well, how convenient that all of the problems, you could just be like, it's a dream. Great. Yeah, great philosophy.
Good,
dirtbags.
Love it.
Turds.
But yeah, so, you know, they might be from Earth. They might be from a bunch of parallel Earths.
Mm-hmm.
They could be remnants of the old empire that are popping up.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one's really sure how the old empire blew itself up.
Yeah, presumably they dug too deep and too quickly.
And greedily.
Too greedily into the Earth and unleashed a doom without name.
Steve.
I am the doom without name. Steve. I mean, I have a name. My doom doesn't have a name.
Yeah, I have a doom without name, but yeah. I'm Steve.
That's me. Okay, so anyway, yeah, the Empire might have done something that sent them hurtling forward into the future and stripped them of their very memories and souls.
Yeah, so, you know, it's very, the old Empire is very Atlantis myth in that they're like, oh, they were super advanced, and they may have actually, like, their destruction might have caused the Maelstrom
mm-hmm.
to exist.
Yeah.
It might have always been that way, but they tamed it while they were around.
So basically, random humans are popping into this world all the time. There is a single sentence that I don't care for when they're describing the newcomers that I just thought I'd mention offhandedly here, and that is they tend to have creamy skin tones, like a like light skin tones, or all the way raiding into deep ebony, almost as if they were the most natural of people from the most natural of places. And I'm like, I don't, that one line, I don't know what it's there for, and I'm not sure what it's supposed to tell you.
In that they aren't showing up as like green.
I mean, I guess that they're not, but that's kind of assumed because they're humans that are popping up.
Well,
it's sort of a weird thing. It's like it's saying that the type of people who tend to pop up tend to be more connected to nature somehow.
I don't know.
I'm not sure why it was there. But it, you know, at least it doesn't. It's not racist the way they put it. They're like the skin tones range from white to black. So anyone can show up, I guess.
Yeah.
Just no Asian people.
Sorry, no Mexicans.
I'm sure that's not what they intended. I just found it a weird one. Because up until that point, I was like, so just literally any random person can pop up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but I guess it's still the case.
Yeah, but I think, weirdly, the fact that newcomers are always humans is a thing.
Mm-hmm. So, the other thing that's, there's another thing that's specific to humans in this setting compared to the other species, which is that they can control the maelstrom in a variety of ways.
Just for
it.
The newcomers.
Yeah, oh, okay.
The newcomers have kale.
The newcomers all arrive with a big bushel of kale.
Yeah, and they're like, ooh, you gotta massage it first, mm-hmm. and then it's good.
Yeah,
no,
you gotta,
trust me.
Get the bitter out of it.
You've had kale before, but not like this.
Yeah.
I massaged deep tissue kale.
Truth be told, you can make kale delicious. You just got to cook it into a soup.
You can make kale delicious. You put it in a garbage can, you have yourself a burger.
Wait, when do we eat the kale?
You don't.
Oh, okay. I understand now.
Yeah, I put it into my magic food processor, and then it turns into a liquid, and then I dump the liquid down the drain, and I have a burger.
I'm going to make you some northern bean kale and linguica soup sometime, and you'll be like, this is pretty good. This is all right.
This is all right. It'd be better if this was a burger and there was no kale.
Everything would be better if there was a kale-less burger. You can't hold all foods to the standard of a no-kale hamburger.
Well, I mean, I can.
Some foods should be kale.
Some foods should be kale, and that food is nothing, and I should have a burger instead.
Do you just want a burger?
No, I really don't. I'm so full.
Okay, so newcomers start with kale, which is their primary affinity is to this thing called kale, which is sort of the shifting space between various other affinities, which implies that they don't come from any one like setting. Like when they arrive, they can go to any one of the major cities or territories of the world.
Yeah,
and fit in.
One of the things that for these characters is, I guess, in character creation, you have a prime affinity, and that is usually where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're from, you know, one of the big cities, you have that. Or if you're, you know, normally from one of the islands, you might have an affinity for, like, the South Sea or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the newcomers, Kale, K-A-E-L, is, you basically fit in wherever.
So it could be Kyle.
Kyle.
Yeah.
It could, but it isn't. It's Kale.
Okay, fair enough.
You fuck.
Whoa! Huge slam on me out of nowhere. I'm just saying it could be Kal-El, and now I'm a fuck all of a sudden?
Yeah, it's not Kal-El. This isn't like Superman's uncle or something.
It could be Superman's uncle or something.
Or something.
All these guys show up on Earth the Maelstrom, with an affinity to Superman's uncle or something.
Yeah, they all have an affinity to Superman's uncle or something.
Mm-hmm.
One of those two things. Either Superman's uncle or something.
Choose one. We call it Kal-El. So most people on this world have an affinity towards where they're from, and that's their primary affinity, and that's an important part of character design.
You want to just get into characters then?
Can we start with species and then get into characters?
Sure.
I feel like that might be the next thing to do. So
I mean, there are a bunch of weird non-human ones.
Mm-hmm, but there's not as many as you think, and it's hard to really describe a lot of them because this book's art is, oh, gosh, just a disaster.
Yeah, most of the art in here is just like some pencil scribblings that you might have in a notebook if you were specifically designing dresses.
Yeah, like if you're the kind of person that went to college and spent some time being like, maybe someday I'll get into seamstress stuff.
I'll be a fashion designer.
Yeah, that's why I have all these drawings of faceless skinny women in various upscale dresses. And then someday someone bought that old book from you of those and cut it up and made a role-playing game around it without connecting the role-playing game to it in any way.
Yeah, so many of the drawings are like, this is, I guess, a picture of Captain Whoever, except it's a blank-faced, just like skinny woman, and they might be wearing like a captain's shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh, I guess I'll turn this into a captain thing because they're wearing that.
Yeah. Ah, this is young Wind Force. And you look at it, it's just some picture of Balthier, except they couldn't figure out how to draw his face. It's just FF12's Balthier, which is prescient given that he came out way after 1997.
Exactly.
But,
like I said, game way ahead of its time.
It's so ahead of its time. They knew what Balthier would look like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They even knew to copy his pretentious pseudo-Elizabethan dialogue. So yeah, most of the art's just like these weird fashion model designer sketches.
Yeah, there's a bunch of species that do not get pictures, and I'm very sad because one of them I love.
Yeah, there's a lot I wanted to learn about these various species. So taking it from the top, after humans, I'm just going to go in the order that the book presents them by memory if I can. We start with the Venthi. And the Venthi are basically flightless pteranodons. They're lizard-looking people with kind of that head ridge. They are all about a half as tall again as humans, but you wouldn't know it because they're all withered and bent. And they bend over and shuffle when they walk. And they have very little spirit and very little self-preservation and self-drive because they were bred to be servants.
Nah, you're combining two different ones.
Am I? Okay.
Because the Venthi are basically just beggars.
Yeah, well, that part I thought, I knew that.
But everyone assumes that they have deep wisdom,
because
they normally they'll hang out in the wilderness. Like, that's one of the weird things for the Venthi.
Yeah, they tend to be little tribe groups.
Yeah.
And they just hang out in the wilderness in groups of 5 to 100 or so, and they beg, and they're just sort of pathetic. And they are, originally built probably by the Empire, the Fallen Empire, to be a servant underclass, and they don't have any drive beyond that. That's why they're beggars now, because they don't want to do anything else.
Eh.
I mean, I'm not sure which one you think I'm conflating them with. Are you thinking I'm mixing them up with the Darig or the Saur?
Derg.
The Nerg?
The Derg.
Oh, the Derg.
I don't call them Darig.
Well, that's...
I call them Derg.
It's entirely a matter of... Okay, thing is, the Darig are desert dwellers who are basically like 6-foot-tall brachiosauruses.
Yeah.
Which is an adorable concept.
My favorite thing is... I'm trying to find the... Oh, the Adolans. The Adolans are like weird...
Spider people?
Spider puppies? Because they're like kind of squat and furry, and they got big eyes, and they're very friendly looking, but they also have 6 legs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, these guys are great. I want a picture of them.
There's no picture of them. It says they have a torso roughly like a human torso, covered in fur, but instead of having arms and legs at the top and bottom, it's the same size as a human torso. They have 6 2-jointed legs that come out of them, which sounds bad. I mean, like, human legs are 3-jointed, so all I'm hearing is that they have less joints than human legs.
Less joints.
So they probably just go up once and then down once and just terminate in a nub.
Yeah, some nubbins.
So they've got 6 nubbins on the ground. They live on an island. They live on one tiny island in the middle of the South Sea, are very hard to get to, have nothing to do with anything, and there's no art of them.
No.
But they sound great.
The only thing there's a lot of art of is the krill.
Mm-hmm.
The krill are lobster people, basically.
Yeah, they're basically like shrimp dudes.
And they are South Sea slavers. I don't...
But they're not... aggressive about it or anything?
It's very weird, because the description is like, oh, they're super chill dudes. They just love slaving. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. And every description of anyone, because there's several sidebars in here that are like short stories. Every time anyone's a slave of the krill don't make them do anything, or it's just like, you're a slave on a krill ship. The krill just sort of keep you around like a pet.
Yeah. They're like, we just like having folks.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's weird.
They are, again, very much bigger than humans. They're like 7 to 8 feet tall.
They are super buff, too.
And they're mega buff, and they have huge pinchers plus 4 other regular human hands. And then they have a face that...
Only a mother could love.
Well, they basically have the face of a water bear. Like, one big external snoot thing sort of sticking out from underneath the armor.
Yeah.
They don't have noteworthy eyes or like functional mouth parts or anything, so they're...
They got antennae.
Mm-hmm. Their language is a mixture of clicks and telepathy. They are short-range telepathic with each other.
Yeah. They do have, like, a spoken language, but most of the nuance really isn't going to be able to be translated because they can just telepathically talk to each other, so it doesn't really matter.
The one really good piece of art of them in this book is terrifying because they're huge and they attach these giant heavy blades to their pinchers.
Yeah, that picture is great.
Yeah, you're like, ah! It's the one really high quality picture of any of the species, though, so... There's another picture of the krill as drawn by like a 7-year-old. I don't know what that's doing in there. Like, there's like a crayon drawing of the krill in this book.
Yeah, some of the art in this is like, oh, someone knew what they were doing. And the most of the rest is someone was just doodling in a notebook and then we threw it in here.
Someone didn't want to release this book with blank spaces in it is basically what you get the impression from that. So, okay, Venthi, the servant race. Darig are a quadrupedal race. There's one drawing of one of their faces, and that's pretty much the only way I was able to picture what they're supposed to be. Because it's described as quadrupedal lizard people from the desert.
Yeah, I was just like, wait a minute, are we just like Gila monsters that are sentient? What's going on
here? What's this situation? But then you get one piece of art, and it's a brontosaurus head, or an apatosaurus head, if you want to be pedantic, wearing...
And you do.
And of course I do. I don't know if anyone else does. Wearing like old-fashioned glasses, like some Geppetto-style glasses. and it's just its face. So from that one picture, we've been able to establish that they're basically 6 foot tall, like apatosaurs. They're
that's a real weird image for me.
I know, and it's great though, isn't it? Just like little tiny
little baby apatosaurs,
little baby apatosaurs roaming the desert. Their whole body plan, the whole point of apatosaurs is that they were huge, so they could reach the tops of trees. And yet here we see little ones.
Yeah, well, there's only little trees in the desert. They're like, ah, I'm going to eat the top of this little shrub.
I'm going to eat this. The leaves at the top of the bush are the best. they tend to be very low key. They don't like being, they don't like being slaves is a weird thing to say, but it is one of the things it says about them in the book. They don't like being roped into being work animals, even though people think that, you know, they're bipedal or quadrupedal. They could probably pull things pretty efficiently.
Yeah.
And when they show up in human civilizations, they're almost always just one of them in a human town, and they regard it as a curiosity.
Yeah.
After that, there's the bad guy race, the Shrikes.
Yeah, they are assholes.
They're big,
ugly humanoid.
They're kind of fish birds.
Yeah, their faces are, whoo, baby. One picture of it is like, ugh, god damn.
Yeah, they got like rotatey eyes that can swivel from the side of their head to the front, and kind of a gross wet beak. Their
skin is covered in a weird oily secretion.
Yeah, they run around in loincloths and hit people with sticks that can shoot dark lightning.
Yeah, they got like, everyone's got like a staff with a crystal on the end that can shoot beams, and I'm like, that's weird.
Yeah, they're a very weird species.
And they hate everyone.
They hate everyone. They tend to congregate around cities and so on and just run at the walls of the city like jerks.
Yeah. They're just assholes.
They're just assholes. They're just nature's own asshole. John Travolta.
Nature's
stars.
Own asshole.
So, okay. But the one thing it says is that as gross and stupid and monstrous as they are, they speak beautifully.
Oh, they've got voices like angels.
Yeah, it says, against everything else, their voices are truly angelic.
Ugh.
I'm like, what do they say, though?
Oh, they sing.
Oh, I'm definitely going to come in there and stick my foot up your ass.
Oh, no, it's their songs. They sing songs when they're attacking a city.
Oh, so
and
they're just
beautiful.
Sing like,
I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Henry the Eighth, I am.
Yeah,
and
nothing
then
more
just
beautiful
a bunch
than that.
Of nasty ass, yellow, oily fucking birdfish comes stomping in singing Henry the Eighth.
Mm-hmm, that's pretty much what I was expecting.
Good.
Maybe something by the Wuzzles.
Yeah, there's also the Kenrotha, which is the everything is a dream race, and it's...
Oh, that's right.
It's cat people.
They're cat people.
And you either have full furry cat, mm-hmm. where they're like, oh, I look like an anthropomorphic tiger, mm-hmm. or you have cat girls, where they're like, I'm a human, but with cat ears and a tail.
Which is weird, because towards the end of this book, they clearly bought some full-page black and white art from someone who was only willing to draw dog people.
Yeah, and they're like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah, let's put these pictures in here. There's no species of dog people in this book, but... By God, we're going to have a werewolf fight another werewolf and sort of a, like a, you know, Egyptian dog head god kind of guy wandering around the desert. The only other race I can think of off the top of my head is the Sowl.
Yeah.
The Sowl are semi-quadrupedal, leathery, flying squirrel style people who live in the high mountains.
The mountains.
I remember you.
In the mountains.
Mm.
But you.
We're doing old Warcraft stuff today.
Old Warcraft.
That's a preview of what we're doing for Halloween this year.
Yeah, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, the Kenrotha are the ones who are like super into the dream, but it's the Sowls who believe newcomers are dreamers from another world.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, you were asleep and then you turned into things. Like, you just got swept up.
Why we need the opinion of these semi-literate mountain flying squirrel bat people on human newcomers who pop up in the woods, I don't know.
But, well, but we get it.
We get it.
That's right, we do. And that's basically it. There are what are known as strangers, which are just people who wander out into the wilderness and come back
changed.
Like, they're like, oh, I've got secret wisdom, but I speak in riddles. Mm. Like, okay, thanks, dude.
Okay, good.
Good well, job. You did it.
Fun. And then there's two other groups. The strangers are one of the three groups of touched by magic types.
Yeah.
That are wandering, mostly humans, but not exclusively. The first one is the Shroud. And the Shroud is basically the fraternal order of wizards who wander the earth being mysterious with hooded robes on, and they're there at every big event, just kind of hanging out in the background and being portentous.
Yeah, they're the watchers.
Mm-hmm. And then you've got the Shroud, or the strangers, as mentioned. And the third one is the least well-defined, the Malatin. The Malatin are basically crazy people who might be spirits that have temporarily taken physical form.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really mention it, but there are, like, ghosts out in the maelstrom as well.
Sure, why not? Why not just throw more crap in here?
Yeah, well, I mean, they're like, oh, there's weird spirits. I don't know if that spirit is actually just the dream of someone, or if it's a time...
Or is the dream the spirit of that person?
Hey, you know you do that a lot for this, but it's not as bad as, like, Delirium, which actually did that shit.
It did this, it did that in several paragraphs, especially stuff about the dream.
Eh.
Yeah, you know what? You're fine. I'm not going
to
keep
doing
it.
All I'm saying is I'm going to go to bat for this game, except for the fact that they have the one printing company in this is Hubris Backwards.
Yeah, Sirba Press.
Yeah.
Why don't you stop on by and buy one of their dog bounds?
Yeah, they finally figured out how to make books.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of from trees, it's all like dog skin bound, like dog leather books,
mm-hmm.
which is, I mean, that was basically a thing in the ancient times, is you would have, like, instead of pages made of paper, you would have actual, like, skin pages.
Yeah, because making paper is hard and expensive.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so instead we just write on, like, you know, lambskin.
Sure, why not? But in this book it's dog skin.
Yeah.
And so they have dog bounds, which are the Penny Dreadful novels that are constantly being mentioned in this.
Not to be confused with the Dog Throng.
The Dog Throng is a group of South Seas pirates who believe that all humanity in the maelstrom is actually from the North Star.
Well, all newcomers. They're all newcomers are the Dog Throng.
Oh, okay, yeah. The Dog Throng is the organization of primarily newcomers who believe that all newcomers are actually here from Sirius, the Dog Star, and that they're all bound to go back there someday.
Yeah.
And when you read through their section, it's not that interesting to read through because it's like, and what do you guys think of the Sowl? We think that the Dog Star is where newcomers are from. Okay, thanks.
Well, Ken. Yeah, I mean, they have like a paragraph that's them. It's like, what's this guy? Group of newcomers. They think they're from the stars, and they're pirates.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's it.
Fun times.
Yeah.
A plus. Okay, so there's the species. Yeah, there's ghosts out in the wilderness. There's wizards. There's so much stuff.
Character creation
is very, very simple. You draw a little sketch of your character, probably without a face.
That points to, like, your dress and talks about its hem and...
Yeah. Oh, this part should be made of black vinyl. You want a boxy neckline for maximum gothiness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You should draw a little picture of your character, give them a name, a location that they're from. The book goes out of its way to mention that you can play as what the fuck ever. It doesn't care.
Yeah.
You can play as the humans, you can play as the newcomers, you can play as a sowl, you can play as a dog.
Yeah, you could be... A dog, not you, ready to be turned into a book.
Mm-hmm. It's like not even like it was like you can play a Rossiel, which is sort of like intelligent ferret people. That
it's like a ferret raccoon that has the ability to speak.
Some of them have the ability to speak. That are wandering the world. I think they just wanted to have cute animal companions.
Yeah.
But then it goes on to be like, also you could just play as the family dog. We don't care.
We don't give a fuck. You can do anything you want.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is based around the descriptors and affinities that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a main affinity, and like we mentioned, it's usually wherever you're from, but it can vary. It might be you have a prime affinity for, like, magic, or you might have a prime affinity for...
Kale.
For Kael'thas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kael'thas.
Yeah.
Why not, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've got a prime affinity for Kael'thas.
After you fought him, like, 3 times, and every time he's like, the last time was just a setback.
Ha-ha!
World of Warcraft references.
Warcraft, my dude.
Okay, so to make a character, you first choose your prime affinity. There are 4 stats. I forget what they officially call them. They are chaos, which is the last one, actually, so I should go from the top. Matter, mind, spirit, and chaos.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what they call those 4 categories.
I don't either.
They're stats.
They're your stats.
They start at 0. Now, to raise them, what you need to do is choose descriptors.
Yeah, there's not really numbers for them. It's just, oh my god, I saw the picture drawn by Little Pete of some krills.
Mm-hmm. Some krills.
Some krills.
Yeah. So to raise, they all start at 0, but really they just start at nothing. Like there's not even a 0 there. When you're building your character, you choose your primary affinity, then you choose 2 descriptors. And each descriptor you choose has to be assigned to one of those 4 category stats. So, for example, you can choose your descriptors to be things like quick as a snake, or what it actually says in there, which is like quick as a snake on a hot day with an attitude.
Yeah.
Hi, 1990s.
Yeah, you can do like a very weird descriptive thing, or you could just be like
fast,
charismatic.
Yeah.
Like that could just be a descriptor you have, or you could be like, has a smile that makes everyone want to know more. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get as ridiculous as you want with it or as plain as you want.
Yeah, I won't go to bat for quick as a snake on a hot day with an attitude.
Quick though. As a snake on a hot tin roof.
Because is the snake also quick if the day does not have an attitude?
Yeah.
Is it the day that has the attitude, or is it the snake that has the attitude?
Well, some say it's the snake, but some say it's the day.
Some snakes say it's the you.
Some dreams. Anyway, the main thing is you're going to have these 4, I guess, just stats. I guess I'll just call them stats. I was trying to find what they say it, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You have your prime affinity, which just gives you automatically a dice to anything you do with that.
Yeah, and that means that if you're from the neighborhood of Perkani or whatever, then Picarni, the place where the good beer is from.
Ah, Picarni.
Yeah, find Picarni, where the good beer is from.
Oh, get the good Picarni.
Captain
Pace Picarni sauce.
Captain Jean-Luc Picarni. If you're from there, then you get like, it basically helps you at any time you need to make any kind of action or role resolution that involves that neighborhood or things that pertain to that neighborhood.
Aspect. That's what the names are.
Aspects. Okay.
You put descriptors under aspects.
So you get 2 starting descriptors. You have 4 aspects, which means at least 2 of your aspects are going to start at nothing.
Yeah. So no matter what, you're going to be basically fucking garbage at the start of this, because mm-hmm. you're only going to have dice to do something based on how many descriptors are in a thing. And it doesn't, again, really matter what they say.
As long as they say it with inflection.
The hook.
suck it in.
So the aspects, if you've got, like, say I put 2 into matter, I'm like, yeah, my dude's beefy and quick.
As a snake.
He's beefy as a snake and
on a
quick
hot
as a
day. Quick as a day.
And none of the rest of them have anything. But if I'm doing a scene that is based on matter,
mm-hmm.
so I'm doing something physical, then I will automatically get all the dice from that stat to roll.
Mm-hmm.
And in a scene that has multiple people, like if we were doing a scene and it was like, oh, you're all trying to run from the Shrike.
Yeah.
Then it would be a matter scene, but your dice would equal everyone's body put together. So if there were 4 people and everyone had a 1 in body, you'd have 4 dice.
Right.
The dice system in this is very interesting to me because it's just you succeed on odd numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use any die you want. You can grab a handful of random dice and roll them, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, unless you have a weird die that has an odd number of faces.
Which, doesn't exist.
I think I might have a D7 somewhere. I forget.
I don't think you do. I don't think you do.
Mm-hmm. I definitely have a D101.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's a die I have. I've just never shown it to you.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, it lives in Canada.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Uh-huh. Yeah, it had a flu last time.
It's usually too busy with its modeling career to be around the house.
Well, it's a 101-sided die. Obviously, everyone wants to see it.
Uh-huh.
It's very busy.
It's super rare.
Normally, when it's in town, all we do is fuck.
That's right. That's when I'm unavailable to record the show, John, is usually because I'm fucking this die.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can get just a handful of dice, roll them, and any odd face that comes up is a success.
Mm-hmm. And any even face that comes up is nothing. It's not a failure. It just doesn't contribute.
Yeah. It does have an optional rule.
For exploding ones.
For ones where it explodes. And then if you roll another one, that explodes. Which means you can adjust the difficulty not just on how difficult the task is, like how many successes you need, but you could also adjust it by going like, all right, I'm gonna keep the difficulty the same, but now you've got to roll on like d10s instead of d6s, or if it's easier, like, here, I'll give you d4s to roll.
Right.
And the game doesn't actually say that. It just says that you can use exploding d1s, but again doesn't mention like the fact that that's very different depending on what dice you're rolling.
I know. You think you just flip coins at that point. They're D2s.
Yeah, and be like, okay, fine. I'm rolling this D2. It's a D4 that only says one or two on it.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go.
Just don't roll a backgammon die because you can't succeed with it.
Yeah, at all.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Or
doubling cubes. Don't try it. Yeah, wait, do they have ones on them?
Don't try and roll a targeting die. Oh, no, I rolled a scatter die. I didn't get anything.
Well, this was a huge mistake.
Oh, I don't know why I did that. But, yes, the game then also has margins.
All I rolled was the Quentin Tarantino sex dice.
I got exploding feet.
Are you sure you're not playing Heroes Unlimited?
Good.
Jokes. Okay, so.
So, in addition to that, you have margins of success.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just enough to, if it's like a difficulty 2 thing, so you need at least 2 successes to do it. There's also how many more successes you got gives you a better result.
Yeah. There's examples of the success margins in here that I felt were not, well, at least one set was not my favorite thing. It was partial success. Everyone gets through, but someone's wounded. Oh, no, sorry. Partial failure. Everyone gets through, but someone's slightly wounded. Partial success. Almost everyone gets through. One person is trapped on the other side.
What?
And I was like, well, that's bad. I'd rather take the wound than have one person stuck fighting a bunch of monsters by themselves.
Yeah. Well, the way the game works as well is you do everything in scenes. So there's no point where you're like, all right, I'm going to swing at this monster, and then he's going to swing at me, mm-hmm. and then it's your turn, and you're going to do whatever. You roll the dice for a scene. So the scene might be running from the Shrike.
Yeah.
And you would roll, and depending on how the dice came out for numbers of successes and everything like that, you would then describe how the scene plays out.
Mm-hmm.
So there really isn't a point where you get to go like, oh, I'm going to try and use my thing to jump over a ravine while this person does whatever, unless you want to do
A quick
take.
Yeah, quick takes are when one person would like to do one thing related to the scene, but not of the scene. Basically, boil down to a sub-scene. So, for example, if everyone's fighting dramatically, but one person is like, okay, while that's happening, I'll try and quickly pick the lock on the window so we can all jump to safety.
Yeah, and
You zero in on what they're doing.
You do they burn one of the descriptors, and if you burn a descriptor, it can't be used for the rest of the session,
mm-hmm.
but it's not gone. Like, if I burn a descriptor under mind and we go do a mind scene, I still have the total mm-hmm. in that. I just can't burn that descriptor again.
Yeah.
So you start up a new scene and you'd say, you know, okay, I'm going to pick this lock. And depending on if you succeed or not, that can affect the main scene.
Yes. Yeah. Like, or and also, depending on how badly they fail out in the main scene, that can affect your sub scene.
Yeah.
Like, if you fail really badly, well, so in my aforementioned example, where someone is trying to pick a lock while a bunch of people fight, if the
fight scene went poorly,
if the fight goes extremely poorly, and there's like three extra failures, they can take half those failures, rounding, I believe, up, and apply them to your, as increases the difficulty, to your sub scene,
yeah,
removing your successes.
It's so much harder to pick this lock when everyone has fought past your buddies and are trying to get you.
Exactly. It's a little. It's not completely ungainly because you're not rolling dice very often or very fast, but it can be a little disheartening to be like, yes, I picked the lock, and then find out, oh, no, I didn't.
No, I didn't because these guys fucked my shit up.
Yeah, oops, oh, well.
Oops, all berries.
So yeah, it's an interesting system. The other thing about when you burn a descriptor is it also buys you a success on the die that would have been rolled there. You no longer have to roll one of the dice. It's just a success.
If you burn a descriptor on a scene, you can do that, yeah. So let's say, again, we've got four dice in body and...
Between the two of us, which would indicate that we've probably gained some levels.
Oh, yeah, we definitely gained some levels, or both put everything into body because we're idiots.
Yeah.
But at that point, if we're looking at it, we're like, oh, I really need a little more juice for this one.
Mm-hmm.
You can burn a descriptor as long as you can describe how it's helping you, and it can come from anything. So I could go, oh, we're trying to fight these krill, but I've got a mind descriptor that says that I'm cunning as a fox.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll be like, oh, I come up with a cunning plan for fighting them that's a strategy to help us win. And so then we get to add that die onto our roll for that scene, but then I've burned...
Yeah.
Cunning like a fox,
and you're not even adding a die. You're not even adding a die. You're just adding a success.
Yeah,
you don't have to roll a die because burning is a fairly powerful mechanic. There are also secondary affinities that you can get your hands on. They are usually things like skills or special gifts that your character might have. They are, I believe, also tied. I'm sorry, they are not tied to any of your aspects. So you can have things like swordsmanship, or knows a lot about horses, or natural born healer.
Yeah.
A starting character has, I think two starting secondary affinities. You can also purchase those for, the XP in this game is called story points.
Yep.
Those are also super important when it comes to assembling die pools. Notably, in the book, almost all of the examples present die pool challenges that seem impossible. I don't know if they just maybe didn't get their difficulty quite right, or if they forgot to show examples of what low-level characters need to face.
Exactly. The big problem is everyone that faces a challenge in this seems like a character that has been around for a while, because normally you'd be looking at maybe a small handful of dice, and they're presenting challenges where they're like, all right, the difficulty is 6, so you need 6 successes. And I'm like, I don't even have 6 dice. What the fuck?
I'm nowhere near 6 dice. And to make it even scarier, when you first read, like, for example, the first example in the book of how to play the game, I was like, all right, there's two guys who want to go into like a masquerade ball and kind of schmooze for information. Between the two of them, they have 4 dice in mind scenes. It's like, oh, wait, are they starting characters? Do they both put both their descriptors into mind? Or are they just higher level people?
Nope.
I guess they're just higher level people.
Yeah.
And then when you read one of the variant rules, it's like, hey, it feels silly when things get easier just because more people are trying to help. So maybe try the expanding difficulty, where anytime more than one person is involved in a scene, you increase the difficulty of the scene by 2 for each person involved in it.
What?
And it's like, why would anyone ever try to help anyone else in that situation?
Yeah, I can't. Ugh.
So there's a couple of missteps in here, but overall the core concept of the way to play, which is build up a difficulty, whether it's presented as a random roll if you're fighting like actual people who have agency, or just a static difficulty if you're trying to like climb a wall or something like that, and then have a representative from the group roll for everybody, and then finish telling the story instead of, you know, you hit him, you are hit by him, and so on. Kind of like these little micro descriptors of what's happening that makes up normal role-playing gameplay.
Yeah.
In this case, it's kind of, you tell the first half of a story, you stop, you build the difficulty, you roll against it, and then you tell the other half of the story.
Yeah.
Which is, it's interesting. It's an interesting system that I don't particularly dislike. I feel like maybe there was some refinement that could have been built into this that's missing.
Well, I think the main thing for me is it just starts you so low powered.
It really does.
I mean, with only 2 descriptors and 1 primary and 2 secondary affinities, I mean, even if we are talking about, I put both of my descriptors in one thing, and I'm doing a situation where like two of my affinities come into play because we're in the town that I'm from and I'm a swordsman and I'm using a sword. Like, okay, great. I guess I've got two auto successes and two dice, so maybe three. And yeah. The easy difficulty is two.
Mm-hmm.
And three or four is hard, which is just the second step after easy, which I don't know why they went directly from easy to hard instead of like easy to normal.
Yeah, it goes easy, hard, very hard, extremely hard, impossible.
Yeah.
So after the section on that basic character creation is a section on the magic skills of this game. There's two kinds. One of them is the natural sciences, and the other is the natural arts and the magical... No, physical physical sciences...
Physical science and the physical challenges and the double dares.
It's the physical challenges and the double dares and the aggro crag.
Yeah, the...
So in order to cast a spell, you have to search around inside the nose of your mind for a flag.
Yeah, and once you find it, then you've got to run over to a whipped cream waterfall.
Yeah, now the important thing is that it's easy to find the power of the flag inside of the giant nose, but can you control it enough to land it in the bucket on top of the helmet of your father?
No, I am a disappointment to my father.
I have forgotten the bucket helmet of my father.
good reference.
Thank you. I've never even read those books.
I know, I have.
Okay, so really, it's you have to kind of harness energy from the local chaos of the storm, and then focus it and send it outward.
Spells, so honestly, spells are not like, ooh, I do a thing, and it's like, I create, oh, whatever. It's mostly just, I shoot energy.
So there's the basic spellcaster can do three things. They can kind of attempt to read the future a little bit, which is the weirdest one.
Yeah.
They can also shoot a wall of force out from their own chest that has very little kinetic energy when it leaves you, but a lot when it hits anyone else. So you basically fire a wall.
Yeah, you just take pure maelstrom energy and create a battering ram
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, the size of a small portion of a wall and send it at people.
Mm-hmm. So you can do whatever you can think of as long as it's involved shooting a wall of force kind of just in a direction.
Yeah.
With no arc to it. They mentioned that you can't use it to fire your wall of force over a nearby wall because it'll never come down.
Yeah.
It just goes in a straight line. The version that does come down is the third application of magic, traveling, where you can kind of, you and some friends get together and then you push the ground away from you. And kind of fly into the air, and then
like,
you have...
The way I interpret it is basically, instead of shooting the wall at someone to deal damage to them, you shoot the wall at yourself, and it just, like, pushes you along.
They mentioned that. They're like, all right, so if you... For overland travel, you have to, like, kind of stand on something, and then use a wall to launch it into the air, and also a wall to catch it when it lands.
Yeah.
So and it says you can go as fast as 20 miles an hour.
Ooh, which, I mean...
It's okay. Better than nothing, I get, but yeah, it's super dangerous. Walking. Given that harnessing the energy is hard and actually using the application for travel is very hard, you better be fucking good at this.
Oh, yeah.
Because once you launch yourself into the sky, you're just going to...
at that point, you're like, great, I've got a parachute.
You better hope.
Or you're one of them squirrel people, and you're like, I launch myself into the sky, and then I just glide down.
Yeah, except I don't think they can use magic. Then it goes on to ice, and it's like, hey, if you're like on ice, for example, you can just shoot a wall at yourself and be pushed along the ice by the wall.
Yeah, you just skid along.
I was like, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you like sit down in a little sled and then push the ice behind you? Why shoot a wall at yourself when you can shoot a wall?
Because there's no kinetic force when you shoot it out.
I guess that's true.
So when you shoot it out, nothing's going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to shoot it at yourself.
Well, what if you attached a sail to the front of your sled and shot at the sail?
See, now what you need to do is you be in like a little cart
mm-hmm.
on the ground,
mm-hmm.
and then in front of you is another little cart attached to you, and you shoot the wall at the cart in front of you, and then it pushes that cart, which the cord is attached to your cart, and it just pushes you along the road.
Yeah.
Now, you're only going to be able to go in a straight line. The second the road curves, you're fucked.
Now, the best thing you can possibly do is, instead of having the cart in front of you, have it to the side of you, connected by a chain, and then have another wizard in that cart. And every time one cart slows down, they shoot at the other cart and push that one forward and then get themselves pulled forward. And then eventually, various ground forces will cause one cart to lag behind, and they shoot, and
there
you go.
Now, what you really do mm-hmm. is you get in a cart, and you put a horse in front of it, and then you travel like a regular person and not an idiot.
Oh, I wanted to shoot walls at the horse.
Then you shoot a wall at that horse, and that horse is like, ah, wall!
I hate walls!
Oh, no! There's one thing horses hate, and it's everything.
being alive, and everything. I forgot to mention being alive. There's two things horses hate.
There's two things horses hate. It's everything and also being alive.
So that's one of the magics. The other one is basic technology. Like you can build a magic, like an example they give is an oven, and it always cooks everything just right.
Yeah. So you can either be a force wall shoot guy, or you can be a tinkerer. Because the other one isn't really magic. It's like, oh, I can create gadgets.
It basically, the second one is, what if Leonardo da Vinci shit worked?
Yeah. It's, what do? I create a weird design for something, and then the fact that I'm in the maelstrom is what makes it work.
So that's the whole second one. It's split up into things that are always working, like a pistol that just shoots better than most pistols, or something that has a special effect where you have to burn a descriptor, because you can build items that have their own descriptors.
Yeah.
You have to burn those descriptors and enter quick scenes in order to activate their magical effect if it's something very special.
Yeah.
There you have it. After that, it breaks down into DM advice and some examples of play, all of which are too hard. And then my favorite, well, while you're still trying to grasp this game and its magic system and the kind of the weird setting and so on, they choose, instead of continuing to tell you stories about the Sowl or include the art or anything, instead to rebuild Verona from Romeo and Juliet in this setting.
Well, yeah, they have an entire thing which is like, hey, if you want to put a city or whatever, it's real easy. Just describe some affinities that the city has, because everything is based on affinity. So you're like, all right, this city has an affinity for this and this, and these are the type of people that live there, and you can create whatever setting you want.
Yeah. For example, we built Verona from Romeo and Juliet. Here's the basic rundown on what Capulets look like.
Great. Thanks. Why?
I don't know. And then it ends when it's like, also, here's some other NPCs you might find in Verona. Rosalind. And then in parentheses, hey, did you know that there's a book where Romeo and Rosalind hooked up because someone wrote a mashup of Romeo and Juliet and Two Gentlemen of Verona, and I think Much Ado About Nothing. And if you want, here's, it's called this, and you can find it there. So here's Rosalind from some other thing.
Ugh.
I forget. I don't know my Shakespeare well enough.
Oh, that's a shame.
I know. I usually know my Shakespeare pretty well, so I feel pretty bad about this.
Oh.
So my apologies.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say this because it confused and annoyed the hell out of me. They... act of burning descriptors for getting extra successes on your thing is called bidding. And every time the system talks about, like, oh, if you're doing a scene, then you're going to want to do bidding. And I'm like, but I thought I got all of my descriptors as dice. What am I? Do I only get to use some? And I was like, oh, you'll burn a descriptor. What?
It's worse than that. It even describes the act of bidding between the two sides as if one side bids more, and it goes back and forth until...
And it's like, oh, you're both going to go back and forth until no one bids anymore. And I go, but you have an entire sidebar where NPCs don't have descriptors they can burn.
And also the way the system works is you just build a die pool and roll it, and it's an automatic die pool. And the only thing you can really do as a bid is whether or not you want to burn for auto successes.
Which is the only thing bidding is. It took me like six reads before I finally found the part where it was like, oh yeah, bidding just means do you want to burn a descriptor or not?
Yeah.
And that's it. But I kept looking at it going like, where do I bid something?
Most NPCs don't have descriptors, but when you get into the examples of play and the like little side adventures that they add the back of the book post Verona, they do. Like, they're like, oh, there's seven krill on this ship that you're trapped on. They have the following stats: matter 4, mind 2, spirit 1. And you're like, god damn, they're all way fucking powerful. What's that shit about? I thought this adventure was for starting characters. Oh, also, they all have relevant secondary affinities, like has weapon. And big and dangerous.
Huh.
Like, they'll have 3 sword sub-affinities collectively if you fight them. You're like, what the... Do they need that? They're so good already.
Yeah, the NPCs that they hand out, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Everyone here is so good, and I am so bad.
And that adventure was strictly written for newcomers who arrive in slavery on a krill ship.
Yeah.
So it was like, you're not going to be high level. You're going to be a chode.
You're going to have, at best, a couple of dice.
Yeah, so that was not very well thought out. The adventures seem to be... It's like they forgot how bad they made starting characters.
Yeah.
So there's a couple... But you know what? These are the kinds of things that we should discuss in the very special segment, Favorites and Least Favorites.
Woo!
I've added a theme song to this.
It's
Brooklyn Nine-Nine theme song.
Nine-Nine?
Anyhow, John, what would you say is your favorite thing about Maelstrom storytelling?
I really like the idea of the setting here. I honestly love
turds.
The shifting setting, the idea that like you could be in a place and it would shift a little bit, because it gives you, especially me as a GM, I get very bored being in one place. When I run a game, if I'm running a game and it's like, oh, it all takes place in this one city, I'm like,
always fuck sliders. This. You can't run not sliders.
Oh, I hate doing something that's like, all right, everybody's in this town, and then you come back to town. I'm like, no, fuck this town. I'm going someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a different town with a slightly different name and maybe whatever. I'm like, I'm changing this bitch.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that with a Maelstrom game, you can play a group that's like, what are you? Oh, we all hang out on like some caravan thing, and we go town to town, and it constantly shifts, and we could get caught in weird adventures and sucked into areas where it's like, oh, and now there's a weird thing going on, and you've got to escape, but when you escape, you appear in the desert, and you're like, oh, neat. Like, that's the kind of thing I love
yeah.
as a GM.
Sure. So that's kind of fun. I like that.
So what is your favorite thing in the book?
I'm going to say my favorite thing in the book is the way that scene description works. It's really innovative for the time period in which the game came out. I mean, granted, they have a lot of people they send thanks to that design games very similarly in that time period, like Amber Diceless and Theatrics and stuff like that. But I like scene resolution in this. I like the basic mechanics of it. The thing I specifically like about it is that it's always team driven.
Yeah. Everything is a scene, and everyone in there is contributing.
Exactly. And I like that a lot. It means that you're always contributing, and you're always feeling like you're invested in whatever die roll is happening.
Well, yeah, because you don't have a thing where it's like, oh, the rogue wants to sneak somewhere. All of us just sit there with a thumb up our ass while the rogue sneaks in. Because you're like, no, it's all scene-based, and everyone's in the scene.
I mean, granted, he's probably doing a quick take to do that, but it's still part of a larger scene.
Yeah, you could be like, oh, our scene is infiltrate this camp.
Mm-hmm.
We have to use chaos to do it, because we're mostly just relying on blind luck. But the fucking person playing a roguish type goes, okay, I'm going to burn my descriptor of, like, hides in the shadows or
like
whatever.
Like a snake.
Hides in the snake.
Hides in the snake, like a hot day with an attitude.
And then I'm going to burn that and do one where I can sneak in,
mm-hmm.
and then that could affect the scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could burn my descriptor of five teens with attitude.
Well, now they're burned.
Damn it, I burned five teens.
You got five burnt teens.
Bearing a regular amount of teens, I suppose. Okay, so what would you say is your least favorite thing about this game?
The worst thing about this game, it has to be the fact that a starting character is garbage.
A starting character is totally trash.
And I hate that. I mean, we always talk about the whole shit farmer thing where you start out in some game and it's like, hey, you don't know how to do anything and you're just a big dumb asshole and everyone's better than you. And for a game that is so narratively driven,
mm-hmm.
the fact that they wouldn't allow you to have the power to affect the narrative to start with.
Yeah.
Feels really weird, mm-hmm. and unfortunate.
Yeah, it's kind
of... If I was running this game, I would say, oh, I'm definitely starting everyone with, like, at least six descriptors, because otherwise you're just nothing.
Yeah, and probably more secondary affinities, because all those things are useful in the terms of not just having some power in the game, but also describing what your character is and is like.
Yeah, what does my character like to do? What are they good at? What are their hobbies? What are they naturally inclined to do?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would do that. But that's my least favorite thing, the fact that you start out so bad.
Yeah, I could definitely get behind that.
And yours?
I'm going to say the magic system isn't as creative as I was hoping it would be.
True.
I'm going to set aside the obvious stuff that we can say about this book. I'm never going to say tone again. I think I'm done with making fun of games for their tone. But this book had some things that would be normal targets for me. The art in this book is just bad to the point of being hilarious.
Yeah, but I mean, the art is bad enough that I'm like, oh, he's just, you found whatever you could.
It's just, they didn't have a budget for art.
No.
It's pretty obvious that that's how this book was written, with absolutely no art budget.
Yeah.
But one person who was working on the book had the ability to draw a weird shrimp.
And they were like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, we'll put them in the
game. I'm going to make that a prime character in here, is going to be like this race of krill, because mm-hmm. that's what you draw.
Yeah, you're good at that. Can we put an erase of like stylized S dollar sign looking things? Because everyone knows how to draw those. It's the 90s, right? So everyone knows how to draw that thing.
Yeah.
I could also draw mushrooms doing lip tricks off of skateboards.
Weird.
Yeah. So we put them in the game?
Yes.
Yeah, damn it.
Obviously, yes.
Stupid 90s. Okay, so, but no, the magic system is, after all the descriptions of how powerful magic is in this world and how mysterious and so on, when you actually get to what a wizard can do in this game, it's shoot a wall, ride a shot wall, or try to read the dreams.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, the fact that magic in this, because they're like, you harness the power of chaos, and I was like, oh, this is going to be great. And then they're like, and you use it to shoot an invisible wall of force. And what? And that's it.
You figured it out, buddy.
Would you do that also in two different ways?
If you'd like to do it, it takes at least two scenes.
Also, it's so fucking hard.
You won't be able to do it.
Yeah. Especially as a starting character. If you're like, I'm going to change my primary affinity to magic, and I'm going to have like a secondary affinity of the maelstrom so that I can harness it, and both of my things go into chaos. And
you're like, great, you got four dice and two harness... any magic in order to shoot the force wall is a three difficulty attempt just to build the energy and then a second attempt to shoot it.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, never mind.
Yeah. So that's disappointing. I mean, you might get away with saying that the thing I'm complaining about is the same as the thing that John's complaining about, but I really wanted more variety to what wizardry could do in this game.
Yes. Being that you're harnessing chaos, it feels like there should be more to it than just shooting a wall of force.
Mm-hmm. So there you have it. That's my least favorite thing. Would you play this game?
I would, actually. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. This is the type of game where I'm like, I could sit down and play this. It would be an interesting world. You could do some very weird things with it, and what you play has a lot of variety. I mean, like you said, the book is like, oh, you want to play the family dog? Be the dog. You could just go ahead and be like, what do? Oh, I play an intelligent bird, and I speak, and that's it, and no one cares.
Yeah,
and that's my character.
Yeah, because it's just kind of a storybook world, so it's the kind of thing that's born of myth, basically, where a myth might start with, a talking bird came to town one day, and he met a weaver.
Talking to me?
And then the weaver wasn't like, holy shit, a talking bird! Instead, he challenged the bird to a weaving contest.
Exactly. That's one of those things where you're like, no, everyone's on board with anything that happens. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, which is cool. So I'm going to go ahead and say I would agree with that. I would play this game. I'd probably give it a couple of tries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the type of thing where I could see someone that was into this setting doing a really good job with it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. The setting in particular, I feel like, has a lot of potential to it.
Yeah.
There were a couple things I was disappointed about. Notably, it's a super minor. But when you build a newcomer character, the first step is choose what era of Earth's history you're from.
Yeah,
they gave away the mystery. I know you know, but I'm telling the listeners.
Yeah, I know that you're disappointed in that, but I still say, I think that's just choose what era of Earth you look like you're from.
We've had this argument already, but sure. My problem is that 90% of newcomers arrive naked. So if you're supposed to be like, my character's totally 80s because they're wearing 80s clothes, they're not. They're probably going to show up naked.
Well, they can show up with clothes on, it no matter.
You can be the one special, the one in 10
special.
Yeah,
you're the person who comes out wearing like JNCOs and a mesh shirt.
I've got fat JNCOs.
Show up ready for a rave and everyone's like, what's your deal? And I don't know.
Did my Cat in the Hat top hat come through?
I hope so.
I feel like I should have that.
I have an affinity for it.
Where's my dozens of candy necklaces, all of them with pacifiers on them?
Ooh, yeah. Boy, howdy, did I come loaded to bear with a backpack full of glow sticks.
I am ready. I'm also, you can tell I'm here to do E because I have so many bottles of water.
Because I have so much E.
And also all this E. 90s.
Hey.
Hey, man, the book's from 97. Why not?
Yeah.
You can also have them show up and ready to ska.
Showing up ready to ska.
I have an affinity for painting checkers on my shoes. And also for picking it up.
Yeah, that's my matter descriptor. Pick it up.
And my mind descriptor, respect.
I have a chaos descriptor of one step beyond.
Now we got to figure out what the spirit descriptor would be.
Madness.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's fine. It's I have a spirit description descriptor of a message to you, Rudies. All right, so we both play this game.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening, folks. As always, we have been the System Mastery Podcast. You can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com.
You can find us on Twitter, Gmail, Facebook, fucking wherever the hell you want to be. We are there. We're everywhere you want to be.
But most importantly, we're at patreon.com/systemmastery, because that's where you go if you want to get your RSS feed that has all of our shows on it, our Movie Mastery, our Expounded Universe, and our Afterthought.
It's also where you go to get all that sweet bonus content, including the bonus content we're about to make for this show.
That's right, because you see, every time we review a book here on System Mastery, an angel gets its wings.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
We've given, 100 and some odd angels their wings now?
I know, and yet they keep not showing up to reward us in any kind of capacity.
Show up to teach me a life lesson.
Or just to hang out and smoke with me, John Travolta and Michael.
Come on!
So for a single dollar per episode of System Mastery, you can unlock the bonus content for System Mastery, where we make characters in the game we just described, learn a little bit more about the game by actually getting hands-on with it, and always have a fun time.
Indeed. Always.
They're good episodes. They're fun to listen to. If you feel like giving us a little more, then we have levels at $2 and $5 that unlock yet more bonus content.
You can get so much more of us talking into microphones if you want it. And why wouldn't you?
Who wouldn't? We're so good at this.
We're amazing professionals.
Mm-hmm.
We do this.
I'm wearing a full 3-piece suit right now.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a 4-piece suit.
I'm wearing 12 pieces of a suit. All of them pants.
John's wearing 12 pieces of pants right now.
12 pieces of pants.
John's wearing 12 peed in pants right now.
I just can't stop peeing in these pants.
Well, at a certain point, you really do gum up the zippers and so on.
Are you suggesting that my urine is somehow viscous enough to turn into a gummy-like substance that stops the zipper from opening like a glue?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Good.
Okay.
I'm glad we are together on this. My peed-in pants glue pee.
That's
gloopy. Gloopy.
I mean, that's what happens when you pee your pants. When you pee in the toilet, it's like a thin stream just hits the toilet and does not mix with the rest of the water around it for a while. It just settles at the bottom like a coiled up yellow worm.
I thought it was going to be like an oil and water type of situation, but no. Apparently, I am peeing out gummy worms now.
You're basically peeing out that stuff you use to start fires. It's like a paste. It looks like toothpaste, kind of. Like a clear yellow toothpaste is what you're peeing, effectively.
Excellent.
You should see a doctor.
I am a doctor.
Oh, I didn't know.
A Dr. Pepper.
John's a doctor.
Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Is that an old commercial for theirs?
Yeah.
For them? I had no idea.
Hey, look at me. I'm going back to, I think, like the 60s or 70s?
Jesus Christ.
God, that's old.
Patreon.com/systemmastery for more of whatever the fuck that was. Plus the RSS feed. We have the best RSS feed for System Mastery that you can get is the one at Patreon, because it gets you all of our shows, including all of the bonus content you've unlocked at whatever level you're at.
Heck yeah.
Definitely the one to go to. So otherwise, like I said, you can find us on Twitter, or like John said, because I was busy coughing. You can find us on Facebook, Gmail, Reddit, Twitter, all those fun places.
Heck yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you in a few weeks with more content. Unless you're a bonus content subscriber, then we'll see you in, like, I don't know, a couple minutes, however long it takes you to go get that one. And have a good week.